Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock, fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera. So whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/video lock. Your front door, your sanity. I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids. We all have families we want to take care of. And I personally checked something off major on my to-do list, life insurance. It's a tough topic. It's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Welcome to Success Story, the most useful podcast in the world. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. The HubSpot podcast network has incredible podcasts like the Salesman podcast hosted by Will Barron. Now, if you work in sales, you want to learn how to sell, or you want to peek at some of the latest sales news and insights, you need to listen to the Salesman podcast. The host, Will Barron, helps sales professionals learn how to find buyers and win big business in effective and ethical ways. If you think any of the following topics resonate with you, you're going to love the show. How to find and close your dream job in sales, 12 essential principles of selling, digital body language, how to have better Zoom sales meetings, or how to tell a remarkable sales story. If these are topics that would interest you, go check out the Salesman podcast wherever you get your podcast or at hubspot.com/podcast network. Hey everyone, just take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Longshot Leaders. It's a podcast that reached out to me that I just started listening to because I absolutely love them. It's hosted by my good friend, Michael Stein. It's edgy, it's different. He interviews absolutely everyone under the sun and speaks through their journey, unpacks the biggest obstacles they've had to overcome to find success in whatever it is they've done in their life. So he interviews Academy Award winners, ex-cons, Holocaust survivors, sports heroes, you name it, he interviews them. And he himself also has a really interesting background. So Michael Stein's a host. He's an entrepreneur, writer, actor, filmmaker. He's also a stand-up comedian. So he kind of puts that all into the interview. And then he gets into the how, the why, the secrets of why people do what they do. It's really cool. I actually love the show. He reached out to sponsor, but I don't take any sponsorships, especially for podcasts, unless I actually like them and listen to them myself. So I listen to it. Highly recommend you check it out. That is Longshot Leaders with Michael Stein. Today, my guest is Randy Haken. He is a serial entrepreneur, venture capitalist, angel investor, philanthropist. He currently runs the Gratitude Network. This is a 501c3 not-for-profit. He founded it. It provides coaching services to social entrepreneurs around the world. He's been in the startup game for a minute. In 1997, he co-founded Outlook Ventures. They invested in over 30 growth stage internet and technology and software companies over a 10-year span. His street training came from executive roles that he held at IBM, Apple, and Paramount. In 1993, he joined a series of technology startups and held senior sales and marketing positions at Yahoo, Electric Minds, and NetChannel. He's been an angel investor for more than 20 years. He's invested in over 30 early stage companies, including early stakes in AOL, Yahoo, eTeams, Sherry's Berries, Napa Pharmaceuticals, iFluence, Table.co, Fast Pencil, Le Concierge, Enter Allies, CrowdOptic, Alploy, QA Symphony, eFarmix, and Sculptology, to name a few. So he's been doing this for a while. What we've focused on is why, after working in all these tech companies, why he is so passionate about social entrepreneurship and why it's so important to invest and help people that are focused on socially responsible causes and businesses. This is what the Gratitude Network is all about. This is what he's built up. So we spoke about his experience and how a startup has matured over his entire career, because he's been in it for a while. We spoke about Gratitude Network, what it's doing for businesses, different strategies that for-profit versus not-for-profit businesses have, how to launch a socially conscious business, also how to look for help. And this is lessons that could apply to a socially conscious business or entrepreneur or founder, or somebody who's just looking for help, but how to find a coach to help your business, what gaps should they fill, what has more merit, taking an MBA or continuing education versus finding a mentor or a coach, and some red flags that entrepreneurs should be aware of. So a lot of great entrepreneurship startup lessons, but heavily focused on social entrepreneurship and how social entrepreneurship is something that he wants to double down on, and his reasons for why it's so important to support these founders and entrepreneurs. So let's jump right into it. This is Randy Haken. He is a serial entrepreneur, angel investor, venture capitalist, and philanthropist.
Well, I grew up on the East Coast. Apparently, I was a natural born entrepreneur, because my parents tell me that age 8, I was already setting up businesses for all the neighborhood kids and charging them, 25 cents for a museum fee so they could come look at a bunch of bones and rocks that I put together. But I ended up getting a good education after that, though, at Brown in Providence, Rhode Island, and really enjoyed putting together a independent study there on the area of organizational behavior. Went on to business school at Harvard. And then Apple Computer drew me out to the West Coast. I went my first 5 years out here, sales and marketing for Apple, including creating their worldwide developer program for multimedia, which is sort of the dawn of the internet and digital media age. So timing was perfect. A couple years later, I found myself introduced by Sequoia Capital to Yahoo, to the founders there, and I joined the team as the VP of Sales and Marketing as part of that founding team. And then after Yahoo went public, just a series of startups at the COO and VP level, different roles that I enjoyed, and eventually created a venture firm so that I could invest in the CEOs that I was already working with. Outlook Ventures, which my partner, who is a schoolmate from Brown and Harvard, and I, created, lasted about 15 years. We did three funds, about $250 million under management, and a chance to really work with a lot of great entrepreneurs, which is what I love most. And then in 2013, after 15 years of that, I began to formulate plans for giving back. And that's when I created the Gratitude Network, which I'm running today.
So you've done all of it. You've progressed past the venture stage. You were the operator. You invested. Now you're giving back. So what was it that made you leave the venture space and start this new, like, Gratitude Network? What was the thing that just caused you to need to do this as the next step in your career?
Yeah, well, I know it probably sounds trite, but the word gratitude initially comes to mind, in that I think I had done very well career-wise and financially, and wanted to think about how could I express my gratitude. Actually, Tony Robbins had a major impact on me. I chanced upon meeting him when he was presenting at the TED conference, and he invited me to work with him on a startup called My eLife. And then, spent a lot of time going, thinking personally about my own situation. He has a date with destiny, which I went through twice. There was also another guy, Bob Buford, who's the author of Halftime, became a personal coach for me and helped mentor me through the beginning of the Gratitude Network. And I think all of it kind of came together right around my 50th birthday. I had this crazy idea that I would blog or post something I was grateful for 365 days in a row. And pulled that off. And somewhere in the middle of actually looking around me and seeing what I was grateful for, and you begin to run out of things after about 100 posts, so you really have to look around. This idea of engaging my network. I've been very blessed with a good network of friends and colleagues, and how could I engage them in giving back as well? And so that's how Gratitude Network kind of was born out of the old venture capital career in the sense of gratitude.
And in your mind, after doing all this, like, what is gratitude giving back, or is gratitude your definition of it, like really understanding what you've achieved in your life, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it really is a combination of both. Initially, I think more, you know, focused on me grappling with what can I do moving from success to significance, but also just, and of course, the network that I had and how we could all work together to make impact. But, you know, the Gratitude Network thing, you know, the reason we called it a network is really that the idea is to get around social entrepreneurs who are making impact on children and on education. And so, you know, the network effect takes place by finding coaches and finding expert advisors, and everyone's doing this work, you know, pro bono. And then matching them with the most incredible social entrepreneurs around the world. And, you know, coming from a venture capital background, I kind of realized, sorry, my earpiece keeps falling off here. I sort of realized with venture capital that you can impact people with money, but what it really comes down to is impacting people with, you know, one-to-one support of the top leadership team. That really makes a difference. And so that's really what we wanted to focus on with Gratitude Network.
And right now, the current iteration of Gratitude Network, what are you actually doing? Is it, to paint a picture for people, is it like an incubator? Is it a network of advisory? Is there a venture part of it too that actually invests? So walk through the whole gamut, and I want to then unpack some of the companies you work with as well.
Sure. All right. Well, first of all, I think of it now we're evolving really as an accelerator. So think of it like an accelerator for impact, just like an accelerator for startups might be focused on enterprise software or, you know, internet, consumer internet. This one's focused on any social entrepreneur around the world who is focused on children, youth, or education. So anything up to college age, essentially. And the thought here was, let's surround them with leadership development, as opposed to handing them money. What we're doing is bringing them resources to be better leaders. But the thinking is, from a leverage point of view, if we can even increase by 5 or 10% their capacity as a leader, we could impact many, many more children. And so that's sort of the leverage model that it works on. It's an annual program. So last year we had 1,300 applications, the same this year. We just completed our application process. And we narrowed that down in 2021 to 33 out of 1,300. So they're really exceptional social entrepreneurs. What they have in common is that they are scaling up. So most of them are not startups, but they have already proven themselves. And now the issue is, how can we help them, you know, accelerate that scaling? And then they also, of course, have in common children, youth, and education. So there's a lot of camaraderie amongst them. They get one-to-one coaching for a year. When the coaches run out of gas on a particular topic that maybe is not their expertise, we have 70 plus expert advisors who are volunteering their time on all different subject matters to jump in and spend a couple of sessions with those entrepreneurs on what they might need, you know, anything from social media to product development, technology, legal advice, et cetera. And then we get them together throughout the year. So they're in a peer group. We divide them into smaller groups. They meet every 2 months. They're supporting each other. They're sharing their common challenges. We have a process called roundtable that they can actually solve problems on these calls as a group. We also have a leadership summit during the course of the year, which is a lot of fun. It was here in Pleasanton for several years, but with the pandemic, we've held it virtually. Last year, over 150 alums and current cohort went through it, and it was a four-day, ton of fun and learning for everyone, and a lot of connection. So I think that's basically the program in a nutshell.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Peloton. Peloton is pushing you further with so much new on the Peloton Bike and Peloton Bike Plus. New classes, new music, new ways to keep your workouts motivating and exciting. And if you're going to commit to a healthy lifestyle, you have to make it part of your lifestyle. It cannot just be a one-off. So any way to make sure that it's fun and fresh, that's how you stick with it. Now, there's a few new additions for the new year that Peloton is bringing: boxing, new artist series music selections, and more daily workout variety. With their boxing, whether or not you've boxed before or you've never stepped into the ring, you can now discover a fast, fun, and furious boxing workout with Peloton instructors in your corner. They're adding new music. Work out to a single artist for an entire class or from your favorite hits to the deep cuts. There are over 100 artist series to choose from. Find your favorite music and turn your next workout into a concert. And more daily workout variety. So key, it's easier to stick to your goals when you keep your workouts interesting. Peloton has a workout for every goal, day, and mood. De-stress from a long day with 30 minutes of strength and 20 minutes of cardio, or do a quick 15-minute total body class before work. Stay motivated while having fun with bike workouts, yoga, meditation, dance cardio, and more. So whatever your goals are, if you're trying to see a better you, a healthier you in 2022, visit onepeloton.com to learn more. That's onepeloton.com, onepeloton.com. And what would you say the biggest biggest differentiator between what Gratitude Network is and what all the other accelerators in the world would be?
Yeah, great question. So one, it's a focus on youth, children, and education. So that in itself narrows it down pretty much. There aren't that many accelerators or incubators. Two, most incubators or accelerators are focused on early stage. And we're focused on the mid to later stage and really the growth stage. And what you find is they already know how to get funding. If they're nonprofit, they're getting funding, you know, typically from corporations, foundations, families, right? But what they are doing is kind of tripping on themselves, either because they don't know what they don't know. Many of these leaders were former teachers or people who just stumbled into an amazing, nonprofit or for-profit social enterprise, but they weren't trained. You know, they don't have 20 years of street smart as a business person. They don't have an MBA or anything like that. So what are the leadership skills that we can bring to them and to their senior leadership team that would help accelerate and help them get out of their own way to accelerate their programs and their work with kids? So I would say those are differentiating. Yeah. The other is we're both hyper local and global at the same time, which is a bit unusual. So we're in more than 60 countries around the world over the last 6 years. And our coaches are spread. We've got more than 30% of our coaches around the world and expert advisors. Now almost 20% of them are global. And so each year, the cohort's typically 60% global, 40% US, and within the US, quite a bit in the major cities, as you would imagine. So a lot of inner city type work, and some rural America work, but in the Bay Area in particular, each year there's typically 8 to 10 of our, 25% of what we do here. So when we're going and looking for help or sponsorship, we're able to tell local companies that, hey, we've got a group, a highly concentrated group right here in the Bay Area, if you want to support that. Or if your brand wants to support something global, impacting children worldwide, we can support that as well. So kind of come at it from several angles.
So the follow-up to that would be, so you're working with these these founders that have figured out an incredible idea. There is a social component to it as well, but perhaps they don't have that background in business. So what are some of the things that you find founders are running into? Some notable differences in potentially just not knowing what they don't know versus somebody who would be, you know, MBA coming from McKinsey or have an MBA and then doing like a venture back software startup, has worked in enterprise sales for the past, you know, X amount of years, and then becomes a founder or an engineer focused founder. What are some things that you work with mm-hmm. and you help these founders work with? Because I want to unpack some lessons for people yeah. that do not have a traditional business background. That you probably help people with all the companies you work with, and some things that we can sort of maybe help people understand how they can sort of fill some gaps in their own knowledge.
Yeah, sure. So keep in mind, about 90% of who we're working with are nonprofits. So I'm going to kind of frame it a little bit on that side. You won't hear me talking as much about venture capital or, you know, how to attract the next round. It's more about how do you go for bigger foundations, or, you know, how do you come up with an internal income model? But I would say the main areas that I think of are people, and talent is definitely a big one. And we'll come back to that in a second. Then there's execution, just raw execution. And then there's probably the, what's the engine, what's the financial engine that fires this whole thing up? And of course, product and technology, or use of technology for product. So starting with the people front, I mean, I think a lot of the times these leaders are kind of figuring out as they go along who belongs where are the gaps on my team. What we can do with coaches is we can really accelerate how they think through what the team is today and where it needs to be tomorrow. So first of all, there's that, you know, you've heard the expression, putting the right people on the bus in the right seats. It's that kind of work. And that seems to happen a lot. Now, right now, there's a global talent shortage. It's very hard to recruit people. So a lot comes up around recruiting. How do you position your organization to really get the people you need? And a lot related to even what's the cadence of ongoing meetings. How do you communicate as a team? So it's a lot about team building, a lot about leadership development of your team. So, you know, what is the succession plan? If someone's going to move into a VP level role, who fills their place in the org? And so there's a lot of succession planning and making sure that the skills of the team are all kind of progressing so that the whole organization is buoyed by team development. So those are some of the people issues. Execution wise is you see a lot of the help that a lot of the discussions I think takes place around how do I better delegate? How do I organize my team for accountability? You know, how can I make sure this team is by building an accountable culture? I don't have that quite in place. What do I do to get that? What is the timing of our strategic planning versus our tactical planning? You know, what do I do at my annual meetings, my quarterly meetings, my monthly meetings? You know, so that whole cadence of getting together. What can I do to improve the communication skills of the team so that we're able to execute better? So those are some examples there. And then on the financial, you know, so the engine, the flywheel, if you will. What are the elements of the flywheel, particularly as it relates to, you know, can I develop some kind of income generating capability of the organization? Now, in a for-profit, 100% is income generating. But in a nonprofit, you're balancing the work that you're doing with kids, which is programmatic, where you can charge for it. For example, school system might pay for it or government might pay for it. But generally, you're trying to balance that nonprofit work with some sort of income engine so that you're not always looking for donations, but you also have a donation model and you have an income model. So a lot of it happens around there. Sometimes legal issues come up. Hey, should we create a for-profit entity that's an offshoot of our nonprofit, or a nonprofit entity is an offshoot of our for-profit? So we have that. And then lastly, how does my product mix change over time? Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the pandemic, the last couple of years, a lot of our entrepreneurs ran into trouble. I mean, they were doing classroom-based product or service. and they had to completely rethink it. And I think Gratitude Network was able to really help them think about how to, you know, deploy technology better for their service and how to get in a different mindset of how they provide that service.
So everything you just mentioned, that's a lot of stuff to think about as an entrepreneur when starting a company and growing a company.
My head's already exploding.
Right? Like that's not easy. I never even thought about the complexities of starting a nonprofit. Like, I don't think I'd even know where to start. Like, how to even like, or actually, where would you even, like, how do you make that decision if you want to do a for-profit versus a nonprofit?
Well, you know, keep in mind, a lot of these, you know, let me take an example. Give me a second here. I'll pull up an example. Here is, I love this one. So here's Jyoti Thiagarajan, who's in India, in Bangalore. And Jyoti came through our program, I think it was 3 years ago, and she had already a core team. She'd been a teacher for she'd been a teacher for many years, like I'm going to say 20 plus years. And notice that the education system in India really is not great. You know, so she wanted to come up with a better way of giving teachers the resources and the processes that they needed. And so she founds this company called Meghshala. When she came to Gratitude, it wasn't a raw startup. Again, it was a scale up. She already had a team of 5 to 10 people, and she already had some funding, and she already had a model that perhaps worked. But she was a school teacher, right? And so what does she know about, you know, scaling a company? So at a certain point, she ran into, you know, difficulties of all the things I just mentioned. Now, we believe a lot in the power of the coach, and that might be something we want to discuss here on this program. What exactly is coaching? But you know, from where she sat, getting her a coach who would just sort of calmly ask each month, "Tell me what you're working on. Let's organize this a little more." She began to have, you know, organize. These are my people issues. These are my operating issues. You know, here's some product issues. And so, you know, during that year, she worked on, you know, the quality of her program and adding technology to the program. She connected with different peers she was here in person, actually, in Pleasanton, California, for our leadership summit. And then she used a lot of what she learned from her peers. She was watching how they manage and borrowing management ideas from them. But I think it was really the coach consistently with her for a year that was able to sort of get her to think through what are the things that I need to focus on as a leader. So it wasn't so overwhelming. The coach could really calm her down, get her focused on the critical things. And, you know, we go back and measure how she done afterwards. And, you know, I could tell you she went from 6,000 students that they were supporting, and today she's approaching 1 million students. She went from one state in India to almost all the states because we gave her the confidence to present to governments of other states what she was doing in the state that Bangalore is in. And her revenue and grants increased by 50% about a year and a half after she went through the program. So we try to measure these things, by the way, because you know, with venture capital and for-profits, you measure based on what product has come out, how your revenues are doing, your profitability, all that. But with a nonprofit, you want to measure by how many children have you impacted, how many teachers have you impacted, how have your donations grown, has your team grown, things like that. So for all of our entrepreneurs, we measure those sort of things.
And for somebody who is listening, who does have something that sort of falls under this sphere, this umbrella of a type of product that is a social product, are there things that when you're helping somebody scale, are there different variables that you look for to decide whether or not they should focus on getting more grants or monetizing a product? Or is there certain things that you look for that sort of point a company in one direction versus another?
That really is a great question. I would say that it kind of comes out by natural conversation. I mean, I look at my own case. Let's take, in my case, I was working with Tony Robbins and with Bob Buford. Buford in particular would meet with me each month as my coach. He just took it upon himself. He had a short list of leaders that he was impacting around the country, around the world, and I made a short list. So I think that he just had me talk and talk and talk until I kind of figured it out for myself. Like, where are the biggest gaps, you know, if you know what I mean? And I think this is the best kind of coaching is where the coach gets you to all they're doing is asking great questions, kind of like what you're doing on this interview, right? But I think that leads, right? Because these are, I mean, here's another example. Lauren Bush. Lauren came to us about 5-6 years ago. She came through the program. She's President, Senior President Bush, his granddaughter. And Lauren has a group in New York City called Feed. And my sense was that Lauren works intuitively. The more you get her to think about things, the more she will come up with her own ideas of where the gaps are. And I think by and large, that's a you know, because these are really bright folks that they've figured out how to get where they are already by hook or crook, you know, to form some kind of nonprofit or for-profit that's impacting children, and it works. So now the question is, how do you use their own intelligence? How can you get them to just look in inwardly and try to figure out what is missing? That's the best kind of coaching, I think.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Trade Coffee. Now, I'm a coffee lover, and I just found out a really unnerving stat and fact about coffee. 90% of coffee that you buy from a grocery store is actually stale. You heard that right. It blew my mind. The coffee you know and love and you go buy from your grocery store needs an upgrade, and that's not the way coffee is actually supposed to taste. So instead of buying this old same coffee that you're already getting that's stale, Trade Coffee sends you fresh coffee as much as you want. As fast as you drink it, it's going to replenish, but it's always going to be fresh. So Trade sells fresh, roasted, and ethically sourced beans from America's best independent roasters. They ship free to you as often as you like, whole or ground. Whether you're a coffee nerd or you just want a better daily cup, Trade's real coffee experts taste test over 400 roasts and use technology to match you to your ideal coffee based on your preferences and your brewing method. They actually set up a quiz so that you can answer some information and they'll have a better idea of what coffee actually fits your particular profile. And they also guarantee that if you don't love your first bag that they send you, they're gonna replace it for free. They've been featured by New York Times, Wired, GQ. They've delivered over 5 million bags of fresh coffee. I'm a huge coffee nerd, and any way I can get better coffee that I regularly enjoy, I'm game for. The subscription is no hassle. You can skip shipments. You can change your frequency. You can cancel anytime you want. And for all Success Story podcast listeners, they set up an intro offer to get you off the ground. They're offering a total of $20 off your first 3 bags when you go to drinktrade.com/successstory. But you have to get started. So to start, take their quiz. Figure out what coffee works for you. Go to drinktrade.com/successstory. Start your journey to your perfect cup. That's drinktrade.com/success story. Get $20 off your first 3 bags. I think that, so let's talk about that. So you said that coaching obviously is one of the things that has unlocked unlocked some things in your life, but also something that now Gratitude Network does. So let's talk about coaching. Let's talk about what it is, what it isn't, what type of coaches to look for, what type of people you should stay away from. So let's do it, because I know that this is obviously something that people always try and figure out, but it's mm-hmm. everybody and their you know, grandma's a coach. So I'm an entrepreneur. I want to work with somebody.
Right.
What am I looking for?
Yeah. So you have like, in my mind, 3 or 4 options. You know, I used to teach. So I taught at UC Berkeley and at Cambridge University at the MBA level. And so one option, if you're looking for learning, is take a class, right? Do an online class or do an in-person class like the ones that I taught. In that case, it's kind of like the group soaking in the lecture, soaking in the reading, maybe discussing amongst the group. Professor throws out the right questions. It's not so much coaching there. I think of that more of, you know, sort of a little bit mentoring combined with course. Okay. Then you go to a level, you know, where might a consultant versus a coach fit in? To me, a consultant is someone that you would hire to solve an issue that you're not able to solve yourself, you know, to actually do the work for you. Coaching, the difference is you're doing the work as the individual leader. The coach is asking all the right questions for you to, assuming that you have the knowledge about your own space and about the work you're doing, that they're trying to get you to realize what's the next step in what you need. And often because you're closest to the activity, like you know the personalities of the people on your team. So if the coach is asking the right questions, it kind of, you have your own internal conversation or with that coach, your one-to-one conversation, and come to talk out and come to, you know, decide on your own what is the right outcome. There's also this mentor. You know, what is a mentor? We call at Gratitude, we call mentors expert advisors because we found that the mentor word was confusing for folks. Some people view a mentor as a coach. Some people view a mentor as an expert. It's sort of all over the place. But by calling people expert advisors, it makes it clear it's about the subject matter expertise that they have. So at Gratitude, we have coaches and expert advisors, and we don't have anything. We used to have mentors, but we don't call anyone mentors anymore due to the confusion. So perhaps that helps a little bit in terms of what you might use for what type of thing. Now, if I'm trying to grow my business and I'll take right now for Gratitude Network, I would like to figure out how to approach foundations. So as a nonprofit, my choices are either I can hire internally someone who understands foundations and we attack it, or can hire a consultant. If I hire someone internally, either I'm going to coach them or someone ought to coach them in terms of their day-to-day activities, how they work with the rest of the team. They have the knowledge about foundations, but what they might not have is how does it fit into my organization? So that's where I think coaching could be useful on top of knowledge. With by the way, with our program, this 1-2 punch of coach expert advisor works great because the coach is getting you to think about your challenges as a leader, or getting the leadership team to communicate about their challenges. But when we all hit a wall, none of us have, like, we want to develop a new technology product. Okay, let's get an expert in to help, you know, consult and be the expert in that area. And then that might lead us to either decide that we need to hire someone to do the work, or we need to hire internally to get that work done. But let's start with the expertise that we're missing.
Okay, I understand. And if somebody does see value in a coach, because obviously coaches are not free, how far should they take their business before working with somebody that can provide some expertise?
Well, let's see. In other words, where do you run out of coaching gas and you need to call on the experts?
Yeah. Because, well, also because it's going to cost some money too, right? So you want to make sure that you have, you know, unless somebody has a lot of money, but let's assume an entrepreneur doesn't have a lot of money yet. They're trying to bootstrap an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When would they bring someone in?
I think, well, a general coach would be, so with a general coach, you'd be realizing we got a gap here. We are lacking knowledge on foundations, for example, right? So at that point, you know, you're going to need to bring in some expertise. So I think it's at the point where you realize due to the coaching that you just don't know what you don't know, or that you're going to need some short-term expertise to bridge the gap and get you to the next step. Now, a lot of nonprofits rely on pro bono help. So you can get experts, you can, and particularly if you're working with Gratitude Network, it's all pro bono. By the way, we don't charge our social entrepreneurs.
I didn't know that. Sorry,
we don't charge. Yeah, we're an accelerator that provides services for free to the social impact entrepreneur. So they are getting, so our experts fill that gap. You know, what they would do is they will let the coach know, gee, you know, I'm feeling like we've identified an area, foundations that I just don't have the expertise in, and you as a coach don't either. Can we request an expert in foundations? And so gratitude would provide that. But in the real world, without gratitude, you would reach out and you could use LinkedIn or you could use friends and connections, and you'd reach out to an expert and say, hey, we are doing great work with kids and in education. We don't have a lot of money, but we love your background. Could you give us a couple hours of your time to help us with this issue that you're an expert in? So I think that's how you would go about doing it.
Would there be, and to follow up with that, just to sort of, I guess this is a good conversation and just like for entrepreneurs on coaching, but is there things that you should also be wary of when you're trying to find somebody to work with and to coach you? Are there red flags that you would tell people to stay on the lookout for?
Yeah, I think overly prescriptive folks who immediately jump to a prescription when you're trying to explain the problem is usually a red flag, because they're not empathically listening to what your challenges are before making a suggestion. It's like they have an idea already before they even get going. So that's one thing to look for that would be a red flag. Another would be someone who seems to be leading you toward their service. So, you know, you talk to an expert and they're kind of like, it's the hammer nail theory. They're looking for, you know, everything to the hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so you're trying to tell them about your issue and they keep moving you toward the thing that they do. And it doesn't feel like the right fit. So that could be another red flag. A third would be, particularly if you're a nonprofit, if they appear to be moving you toward, you know, trying to sell you on their services as opposed to just helping you solve an issue out of you know, the goodness of their heart, you know, just to provide help to a nonprofit, which a lot of people do out of the goodness of their heart. Mm-hmm. So those would be a couple of things that I could think of.
And then I guess just one more question on this, because I just find this interesting as well, because you've been on both sides, because you've taught at MBA programs at notable institutions, but you've also coached individuals. So do you feel as though an entrepreneur would gain more value from one versus the other? Or do you think that a traditional MBA program still has a lot of merit to somebody who wants to start a business eventually?
Great question. I personally loved Harvard Business School. I love my Brown undergrad as well, where I was able to craft my own major or concentration. Brown's very liberal in that, as many people know, in that way. So I'm a big believer that School of Hard Knocks combined with a little pre-education is a great combo. I felt like 5 years at Apple and a couple years at Paramount, which I didn't mention earlier, but the Media Kitchen, I was invited to be a director at the Media Kitchen for Paramount, the technology group of Paramount. And so working with all kinds of content and movies. And
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins. And I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform: accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win: efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours? That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there, and maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay.
CD-ROM in the early days and great on-the-street experience. I think it's a combination of both. I think getting that, you know, a lot of our entrepreneurs that we work with are former teachers. That gives them some really great insight as to what kids and youth really need and want. So I love seeing that. But, having some education in business doesn't hurt. You can either learn it on your own. It probably takes a little longer. Some people are quicker than others. Mark Zuckerberg seemed to be really quick at, you know, figuring out how to run a business. But he never completed his education. He didn't feel he needed it. The same with the Yahoo founders. They were getting master's degrees. I think both of them at that time didn't finish their master's and they created Yahoo in the middle of it. So it really is up, you know, it depends on the individual, but having watched young people in the classroom and then see where they end up 5, 10, 15 years later, it couldn't hurt. I mean, most of the MBAs I've worked with at UC Berkeley and many at Cambridge have had spectacular careers. I mean, they'll email me 10 years later telling me what they're up to, and they're in the, you know, very senior positions in well-known companies. So it couldn't have hurt, but do you have the money to spend on formal education, or you want to go get the experience hands-on? I think there's both camps. I like the combination myself, and I've always felt that that's most useful.
I wanted to ask, so was there any other points on coaching that I didn't bring up? Because I know you're in this world much more than I am. So any other things that, either on coaching or on nonprofits, entrepreneurs that are in that space that they should just think about, be aware of, that you've seen people experience over their careers with gratitude?
Well, I did want to maybe mention a little bit on mindset. Earlier, you and I, I alluded to this idea of success versus significance. And I don't know if you wanted to jump into that, but a lot of that does have to do, it's funny. I've literally stamped the word gratitude on my forehead. If you think about it,
if I'm
demonstrating lack of gratitude to my children, grandchildren, or my wife, I will hear about it immediately because I have stamped that baby. right in my forehead. But, how does that really relate to this whole, I think a lot of your listeners probably think about success. How do I define success? And some of them are now, as we get older, we think of what's the impact I'm leaving on the world? What's the significance, not just the success? And for me, I lucked out in that word gratitude was sort of in the middle of all of that. And I use the gratitude to push myself, ever so slowly over to the significance side. And, Cicero, the Roman orator, said, gratitude is sort of the root to a lot of human elements. If you're grateful for things, you can find love. If you're grateful for things, you can find happiness, et cetera. And I really believe that's true. So being grateful to some extent has helped me a lot. But when I think about this mindset of success versus significance, it always intrigued me that, many of the people in the Silicon Valley that I have worked with over the years are defining their life based on possessions and based on stock options and based on how many second, third, and fourth homes they can own and this kind of thing. And then their happiness depends on that bar, that expectation that they've set on success, but they never seem to be able to get to the bar. So they always seem a little bit anxious, like they're not quite happy. And I noticed this early on, you know, my wife and I would go to different parties that Apple would have. And we noticed, you know, all the other couples, all they wanted to do in the Silicon Valley is talk about how much money they were making, how many stock options, how, what car they're driving, all the possessions, right? And at a certain point, you run out of possessions, you know, it's like, okay, we got enough. And you're grateful for what you've been given. So now how do you lead a life of significance? How are you going to impact others? How are you going to leave a legacy if you want to? You don't have to. I mean, you can leave a legacy with your children or your grandchildren. That's huge. You can leave a legacy globally, which is what we're trying to do with the Gratitude Network. We're impacting underprivileged children that would have no other help globally and social entrepreneurs who are working with them. So I always encourage when I'm, you know, I'm doing a lot of one-to-one coaching outside of Gratitude right now with very seasoned and senior CEOs. So they're running, you know, $100 million, billion-dollar for-profit companies. And a lot of the coaching is like, they're kind of tired of chasing success. And what will their life look like the next 20 years for significance? So how do they shift that? Do they focus more on family? Do they focus more on church or synagogue? Do they, you know, do they focus more on community? Do they want to take trips globally and impact people globally? I'm always trying to get them to think about what are the things that are kind of, you're born with this desire to, you know, that you might have been born with a desire to make an impact. Let's go back to when you were younger. What is it you wanted to change? Or what is it you wanted to create? Or what is it you wanted to leave in the world? And get them to come back to that the simple, before we got all caught up with the boats and the cars and the houses, what was the simple thing that we wanted to do to impact the world that would make us happy doing it each day? So that's my little mindset. You know, I feel that that's an important part of the whole entrepreneurial journey.
Was it hard for you to make that shift in your own life?
Probably not. You know, I was born to a very creative father and a very loving mom. And so I had this great combination of like this highly creative dad who is like run from one thing to the next, doing all kinds of creative stuff. I try to follow him. And yet my mom was very emotional and very, you know, people oriented. And I think like even I remember at Brown and at Harvard, I was writing papers on impact. I was thinking about dual career couples. How can they spend time with their kids? How do you have two careers in a family and still have a meaningful family life? You know, things like that. So I think balance was the word I used to think of it back then instead of significance. It was like, how do you create life balance? So I'm probably one of the luckier ones in that for some reason, early on, it just struck me that, and I got to say, I've definitely fallen into the privileged category. So there's no doubt about that. It would be a lot harder for me if I'd started off in a different family situation, different neighborhood, different level of education, et cetera, a different skin color, different race, et cetera, you know, anything. Anything other than who I am would have been potentially harder. So I always wonder, you know, I don't really know how to, I can only be me. I can't put myself in the place of an underprivileged child, but I can do the most I can do given what I've been dealt. Yeah. And in my case, being fortunate is like, okay, at the age of 50, enough of the making money, and now what do we do for the next 40 years on the giving back part? Hopefully, a lot of other people reach that. Sometimes it's through unhappiness, I think, that people reach that. They talk to their friends or therapist and like, I've got like this mansion of a house, 3 boats, 5 cars, but I'm not happy. Okay. I'm divorced twice. You know, what's going on? Well, what are you chasing? What is your measurement of success? And is that something society has gotten you to chase? Is that truly what you want to chase, where you would find meaning and significance in life? And this is where, you know, unfortunately with social media and digital media these days, young people, it's really hard for them to differentiate between that huge amount of data coming at them from the world that tells you this is what you should be versus this is who I am. And I've had people in my classes at, you know, Berkeley, you could tell from day one, that person knows exactly who they are. They're 19, 22, 25 years old. They know exactly who they are. And they're already trying to figure out how to put that to work for good work. And then you can tell who's a little lost, you know, it's like, well, I think I need a job that's, well, for example, Harvard Business School is amazing how many people wanted investment banking and consulting jobs. And if you talk to those same people 2 years after we all left and ask them if they're happy, 80% of them were miserable because they were being, you know, used all their time and energy being used up by these larger organizations that they were working 80-hour weeks and not for themselves, for somebody else, and lost their purpose, their sense of purpose. So it's amazing how you can kind of get in that mode of, I gotta have this versus what do I want truly to be, you know, for happiness for myself. By the way,
you
Scott,
work with a lot of, yeah.
I want to add, yeah, having a great life partner. I will say my mm-hmm. wife, Patty, has been a wonderful life partner. If you're able to figure that out early and find that great life partner, it helps tremendously. It really does, because, you know, that person may be the complement. That person will remind you who you are, and they're probably going to know you best. So they'll remind you who you truly are so that you can come back to that center when you need to.
I was going to ask you, like, when were you happiness in life? Is it now? Because you've gone through like that. So that's what I think I'm hearing you say. You've gone through this massive amount of success with career, with investment. And when were you the happiest?
Well, I would say I definitely have calmed down. I'm happiest now as I get older. I would say for a lot of people, that's true, that, you know, they kind of mellow out over time. But I don't know. I look back each period. I'm sure my wife would remind me, no, you were itching for a change. You weren't that happy. But I look back, you know, on each thing now and I go, well, what was the lesson that I learned in that period? And it seemed like there were elements of happiness at each point, but that I was slowly figuring out what do you truly need to do to be happy? And I'm not saying I'm 100% happy every day now either. I mean, I think part of what drives me is I want to make impact. And so I won't be, you know, I've set a bar, you know, but at least it's a bar that's helping others as opposed to a bar that is the next home in Lake Tahoe.
Now, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Grin. Now, Grin is the number one creator management platform, helping e-commerce brands connect with their audience through the power of creator partnerships. Now, influencer marketing, it's easy to get lost in the spreadsheets and busy work, combing through a messy web of communications, looking for content, wondering about campaigns. Are they delivering? Where are the data points? Have you shipped the creative yet? Have you shipped the product yet? Have they billed? Have they invoiced? All of the headache that comes with managing creators and influencers, that's where Grin comes in. So Grin is an all-in-one software that allows you to treat your creators like your brand revolves around them, even though you're actually saving yourself a ton of headache. Grin helps you find and recruit the perfect ambassadors for your brand, streamlines the communication process, collects all the creator content in one spot, tracks the ROI in real time so you can create smarter campaigns that drive sales. With Grin, one person can do the work of an entire team. You can find and recruit influencers, communicate with them, ship product, aggregate creator content, measure ROI all in one spot. You are maximizing every dollar you invest in influencer marketing, and you are eliminating all of the headache, all of the busy work. Brands like Liquid IV, First Aid Beauty, Movement, they all run influencer marketing campaigns at scale and work with thousands of creators at the same time. They're all using Grin. So you need to treat your creators like your brand revolves around them, because in the creator economy, it does. Experts believe that influencer marketing will become a $15 billion industry by 2022. So this isn't going away anytime soon. You have to figure out how to use influencers and creators at scale. Find out how Grin can help you grow your brand. Watch the demo at grin.co. That's grin.co. Influencer marketing is easier with Grin. Find out why at grin.co. That's grin.co. Mm-hmm. Very good. Do you think that that's something that actually, you work with a lot of entrepreneurs. So this is all about mindset. Do you think that there's some merit to having this mindset when you are starting a company, having a mindset of gratitude versus having a mindset of how big can I scale this? How much money can I make? When can I exit? When can I IPO? And if so, how do we teach more entrepreneurs that when, for example, in the nonprofit space and their venture and they go and raise money and venture back the for-profit, it's all about how fast can you scale, how much money you can make.
Yeah, that is a really a conundrum, isn't it? I don't have an answer for that one because, you know, it'd be foolish for me to say, if I look at some of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time, they were driven by perfection of their product, like in the case of Steve Jobs, or to make more money, or to grow. Just love the idea of keep growing, or conquest. You know, even I wouldn't say the current Bill Gates, but the old Bill Gates. I think, if you look at Microsoft in the early days, it seemed to be more about the conquest than about anything else. It just being the operating system that everyone used, and beating out the competition. So, you know, everyone has something that drives them. It'd be hard for me to say, no, you have to be completely altruistic as an entrepreneur. I don't think that'll work for a lot of the entrepreneurs. But I do appreciate the entrepreneurs who have built wonderful cultures along the way. And, you know, I lived through one myself, you know, watching Jerry Yang and Dave Filo at Yahoo. I think they really purposefully, and Tim Kugel, who came in as the CEO not long after I joined, they really built a nice culture in the early days of Yahoo. I really believe the culture at Google was something extraordinary and exceptional, even from the very beginning. The culture of Netflix, totally different. You know, a lot of, you work your way out of a job, and if you don't have the next project, you're gone. All that got posted, that early culture. So I think that there are entrepreneurs who give thought to meaning and building meaning and purpose into the organizations. But I would say in a for-profit company, you kind of have to have both. You've got to have that drive to beat the competition and make a business model that's going to be effective and convince the venture guys that they should invest. And, you know, I don't think you can do all that altruistically. In a nonprofit, I think you have more opportunity as a leader to have that more altruistic approach because you're really appealing to the heart of your donors and you're trying to appeal to foundations in the impact that you're making. So there it's a little more aligned.
Very good. No, it's just a very interesting thought experiment because I do believe that if you have the mindset that you have now, you can be happier long term, which is really what everybody wants anyways.
Yeah.
That's really what the majority of people want. They want to be happy.
Yeah.
But how do we get there? So it's almost like you have to be cognizant of, you have to play the game a little bit to get to the point where you can be happier and be giving more back and having more of an altruistic view on life.
Yeah. And you know, Scott, a lot of us are parents as well. And I think you have a real opportunity as a parent to think through what can I do to help my child understand who they are and what truly makes them happy. And when they're little, you can really see that. You can see what things seem to make them happy and giggle and have fun. You know, as they get older and you get the, you know, school pressures in, it becomes a little harder, but even there, encouraging them to follow a passion. Like, you know, a silly one that my dad encouraged in me, which, by the way, wasn't very cool with the kids. It wasn't very popular with the kids, but he encouraged me as a puppeteer. What's intriguing about puppeteering, if you think about it, it's theater, staging, voice, lighting, performance, all these really interesting things combined. It, you know, if you look at Broadway stage, doesn't even have totally what puppetry has. It's just you've got to make the puppets, you make the costumes, create this, you know, all of this. So he got me engaged in a very creative thing. Today I do it with my grandchildren just for fun, you know, little puppet shows and things. But I think that kind of creative thinking, that right brain thinking, really helped me a lot. For example, I was attracted to Apple because I knew that that's where a lot of the creators were. I was attracted to Paramount. Again, that's where all the movie producers and directors and content creators were. So early days of my digital media career, it really served me well to have the right brain thinking, which you can encourage in a child. And then if they're also left brain thinking, show them how to apply that rigor and the details that they may be good at, or the mathematics or physics or whatever that they're good at. You know, how do you combine the left and the right brain? I call it the intersection of the two brains, and of all the different things you could do with your life is like find that intersection between what you love doing and you're good at and where the world needs you. That, by the way, is called ikigai. There is a Japanese theory of ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I, ikigai. And that theory is sort of, you know, where is the overlap between doing what you love doing, doing what you're really good at doing, doing what the world needs you, or, you know, where there's a gap in the world, and then maybe the fourth circle, economic, doing something that makes money so you can survive if this is the career that you're pursuing. That's the ikigai theory.
I love that. When you work with entrepreneurs, do you find, like what you just described with like the left brain, right brain, do you find that many people who are successful have a combination of both and that intersection?
I can't think of at the moment. There are a lot of engineer backgrounds who become CEOs and have successful companies. But I think if you look at them, the highly engineering oriented type, there was a creative side to them too. It would be hard to create the company, to create the excitement that attracts others, to create the market that you have to create the product and the features that, you know, so even when you're trained as an engineer, I've even seen lawyers. A great example is one of the fellows I worked with at Yahoo was working for Venture Law Group, which served Yahoo in the early days. He later became a senior VP on the operating side of Yahoo using his legal background. And then he later became an entrepreneur. His name is Jim Brock. And Jim is a great example of someone who, with, you know, legal skills, is very rigid, very right brain thinking. He was good at that. But when he applied the intersection of his creative area, he was able to run as a senior VP a major chunk of Yahoo and partnerships and things like that, and then eventually do several startups where he had to create from nothing, pure startups. So, you know, I think I do find that a lot, and then come the other direction, a highly creative person, usually their best bet is to partner with an operator, right? So if you look at, let's take, you know, in a way, the Google founders, I'm trying to think of a better example of where you have a highly creative person with a more of an operations style. But I think in the case of Google, you had two highly creative guys and they pulled in Eric as the third in the triumvirate. Eric brought that operational experience and CEO experience to them. But you often will find that somewhere in the leadership team, you've got in the founding team someone who really understands the subject matter of what they're focused on, and that person tends to be more the right brain or the left brain creative. And then you've got the operational person that helps them along, helps them set the company up, helps hire all those people, etc. think of it like the CEO and the COO partners.
So know where you're weak. Know what you don't know. Know your gaps, and then, you know, fill that gap accordingly, basically.
But yeah, that's... and I always counsel entrepreneurs when they're starting something, if they clearly are having trouble in either the left brain or the right brain thinking, I tell them, look, it's probably worth your while giving up a piece of the pie to bring a partner in who is good at those things, because you're just going to lumber along here, trying to figure this out. It's not your forte. So if it's someone who's highly creative or specialized in an area, I tell them, go find an operating or a technology partner if they're not strong in technology, and give them a part of the equity just to get them on board early so they buy into this concept. You're going to have a bigger pie at the end of the day than try to do it all yourself. Facebook is a great example. I think at some point, Sheryl Sandberg joining Mark Zuckerberg was like a stroke of genius, because he reached a point where he did what he could. He's highly creative in what he set up and how he dealt with the venture world and the angels. Some of these angels were the top angels in the world that he's dealing with, and he's, you know, not even through school. So he learned all he could, and then it's like, I need someone to help on the operations side, and found a spectacular partner early on.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, HubSpot. Now, it's hard to build a business. It's hard to make your dreams a reality when it feels like you're spending all your time working on your CRM, working on mundane admin tasks. But the HubSpot CRM platform is purpose-built for scaling with your business and those big dreams of yours, so it's impossible to outgrow. Now, HubSpot has intuitive visual workflows. It has bot builders. The HubSpot CRM platform can automate campaigns across your website, email, social media, digital ads, and chat for clear communication across all your channels, zero mixed messages. With the HubSpot Teams feature, you can organize your account by teams and segment leads, sort through content, and easily view team performance reports and KPI dashboards. And thanks to sequences, you can create flows that automate sales outreach, follow-up, timed personalized emails, so you can scale your customer relationships like never before. The HubSpot CRM platform is easy to implement and ready to scale, so dream big. Learn more about the HubSpot CRM platform and how it can help your business grow better at HubSpot.com. Very good. Those are just good examples, because I don't think many people understand that if they are, like, especially your first startup, right? If you are very creative, you have to share a bit of that pie just to get some momentum. If you are highly process oriented, maybe it does help to bring in somebody who's more creative. I think that people, when they're first starting their first company, maybe this is just a gross generalization, but a lot of people want to hold on to that thing because it's their baby, and they're scared about giving away equity or giving out too much of that company early on.
Right.
But what you just mentioned was very smart. You know, it's better to have a little bit of something than all of nothing, right? So,
and by the way, it's usually more than a little bit, because the founder will generally keep controlling interest, but that doesn't mean you can't bring in a solid partner for, you know, 10-15% early on of the business, where they feel like they have a substantial piece and a substantial say. Another of my favorite examples is there's a company that I was fortunate enough to work with called iFluence. And iFluence was founded by Jim Margraff, who's highly creative. He's a technologist, MIT trained, very, very creative in his product design and ideas for growing markets. And he got, you know, I was able to introduce him early on to a COO, Dave Steer, who is also creative, but he's very good keeping the trains on track. And he's very good with the details that perhaps Jim would not want to deal with. So put the two of them together, and they made magic. And Google ended up buying iFluence 3.5 years later. Now they've gone off to start a new company called Canoe together, because they realized what a great 1-2 punch. And they brought a third partner in on that one early, who could specialize in the digital media and children side that the two of them wanted to have in there. So that it's like three of them. They learned the lesson on the first one. Then they said, well, what's missing on the second one? We've got another great idea, but we're missing XYZ. So they brought in a world-class person who could fill that role.
Amazing. Okay, I want to pivot into some rapid fire questions just to close this off. But okay. I did want to just say, like, if people want to reach out to you, if people want to go check out more about Gratitude Network, where are they going? What's social, website, all of that for yourself or for the network?
Yeah, really easy. So if they want to reach out to Gratitude, they just pop into Google Gratitude Network. We'll take them to our website. All the the way that site flows through, if you're interested in coaching, it will eventually ask you to put a little bit of information in. That goes directly to our director of coaching, our senior director of coaching. They want to reach me. I'm my first name at mylastname.net, randy@haken.net. And so if someone's interested in being coached, which I do continue to do with senior level folks. I love doing that. And a lot of one-to-one coaching when I'm not running Gratitude Network during the month. And they can reach out at randy@haken.net on that.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so these are I say rapid fire, but like you can choose to extrapolate or you can keep it simple if you like, whatever you want. Okay. The biggest challenge that you've had in your career, what was it and how did you overcome it?
Biggest challenge I had was a little company I started right after Yahoo, where I thought I knew it all. And it was called Electric Minds, with a pioneer in the whole area of social communities. He wrote the original book on what today is just, you know, a part of our everyday life, but social communities. His name is Howard Rheingold. And so I played the COO role. He played the creative role. And we just hit the dot-com bubble at the wrong time, ran out of funding. And man, I took that to heart because we had such a great creative and technology team. And we had technologists all over the world working with us on building a community called Electric Minds. So that one definitely hit me hard. You know, we had SoftBank involved in that and quite a few angel investors. And that was challenging. What I learned from that, of course, was, what are some of the mistakes you can make along the way? How do you pre-think your next round of funding so you don't run out of gas? And who are the key players you want to have involved early in the business so that you have a lot of help in getting to these future stages? So learned my lesson on that one. And it got a little better the next couple. And then with the venture firm, I ended up trying to coach that type of thing to a lot of the CEOs I worked with.
Very smart. A tough lesson, but at least you learn. But that's really bad luck too. That's incredibly bad luck. It is what it is. That's, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, you know, the best thing you get out of a situation like this is, what was the blessing that I got out of this? Because many years later, you'll look back on something like that and you'll realize, man, my whole career actually would have not been the same if it weren't for that negative, that thing that I thought was so negative. So there's always a silver lining. You just have to put yourself in that positive frame of mind to see.
If you had to choose one person in your life, there's obviously been many, but somebody who has had an incredible impact, who is that person and what did they teach you?
Well, a lot of people, I'm sure, choose their parents. I was very blessed to have someone in my life. He is still in my life. And this is now 35, 40 years later. And that is, his name is Barrett Hazeltine. And Barrett Hazeltine is an incredible person. He started teaching 62 or 63 years ago at Brown. Barrett has been teaching for more than 60 years at Brown University, which is not, you know, at Ivy League level. And his whole focus was on helping, in a liberal arts school, people that were interested in organizations and entrepreneurship and business. There was nowhere for them to go in a liberal arts school. There were no business courses. So he invented something called Engine 9, where he had, you know, all kinds of speakers come in. He did case studies, but it was all related to business and entrepreneurs. And I remember seeing John Scully from Apple come in, and John's a Brown alum, and John came and spoke one day at the class, and I just thought, this is so cool that this professor has opened up the world, you know, of all these incredible people and bring them into Brown. And then, you know, I stayed in touch with Barrett over the years. What was most inspirational about him is during the summer, he and his wife, Mary, would dedicate themselves in Africa to teaching at universities, starting with Malawi and then several other African nations. And they would just give their time teaching and trying to impact youth in less privileged countries around the world. That really sunk into me, early, you know, learning about that when I was a student of his. And fast forward, you know, 35 plus years later, he is an ambassador for the Gratitude Network, and we still are in touch on an almost weekly, recently basis. And it's just wonderful to, you know, have a mentor and a coach like Barrett over the years. So I was really, really fortunate to stumble into him.
Amazing. If you had a resource, a book or something that you'd recommend people go check out, is there anything in particular that you wanted to recommend that's had an impact on you?
This back here is my favorite books shelf. You're, I mean, we're talking...
I feel like I have to ask you just because you got
Neil,
like a couple hundred.
We're talking Neil Stephenson Snow Crash here, right? We're talking, we're talking Tony Robbins, you know, Ray Kurzweil. This is my recent favorite. And you know, here's why I would recommend this book. So this book is on coaching. And, you know, those of us who are leaders, the thing is we're really coaching our team. You know, you're coaching your children, or maybe you're coaching Little League or soccer. You know, every one of us has some element of coaching in our lives. And this book boils Michael Bungay Stanier is the coach. And it boils things down to five questions: the kickstart question, the awe question, the focus question, the foundation question, the lazy question. So he's got all these different interesting questions and boils it down. You know, it's something you can literally keep in front of you when you're in a coaching session or with one of your leaders, even with a venture capitalist. If you're pitching to a VC, it's interesting how you can use some of this. You're asking questions, you know, asking great questions, you're going to get great results, great solutions. The better the question, probably the better the solution. So I'm a big believer in this, and he's done a great job, you know, putting that together. My favorite of all time, though, I mentioned it earlier. If you want to talk about going from success to significance, Halftime by Bob Buford. So Bob is my mentor, was really something special. But the book is short and fantastic and really gets you thinking about how to move from success to significance.
Amazing.
Sorry,
those are two. Both.
I gave you three or four books. You asked for one.
I know, like I'm going to complain about more books none of those have been on the show yet. So those are all new. Those are all new recommendations. So I appreciate it. Yeah, that's good.
Great.
If you could tell your 20-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Shut up and listen.
That's good advice.
True. Empathy and listening skills do not come to most 20-year-olds, especially if they're on their way somewhere, right? And however, If you could put on your, you know, sort of listening hat more often before responding, to me, that is like the single biggest thing you can do to kind of, it doesn't necessarily slow you down. It just means you're more informed, because instead of blurting the first thing that comes to mind or having you know, a lot of us, when we're listening to somebody else talk, we already know what we're going to say. So you're not even really listening to the person talk. Mm-hmm. You know, zip it and do more listening would probably be the number one thing. Like, that immediately came to mind when you asked. the other thing I tell my 20-year-old self is, good job. I pat myself in the back. Good job marrying Patty Grant, who became Patty Hagen. Nice work. Good job.
I love that. Good. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. If you find that partner and they're there for you the whole time. That's a blessing. That is a life hack for sure.
35 years. We're doubling that. We're going for 70. We've decided on it. Yeah. So we're going for 70. We're at 35. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations. That's very good.
Thanks.
And then last question, you kind of already answered this, but I'll ask it anyways, ask everyone as the last question of the show. What does success mean to you?
So I think success means defining a life for yourself and a mindset that are you to be true to you, and that, you know, have some impact. And maybe the impact is not on yourself necessarily. It could be impact on family, it could be impact on others in your community, or impact globally. But I think leading a life of success means coming to grips with what are the things that are most meaningful to you in life, and making sure that you wrap your day-to-day and your month-to-month and your year-to-year activities slowly but surely, you know, kind of like an onion over time, so that when you get to the end point, you look back, you go, oh yeah, I wrapped myself with the right things. And, you know, if you feel like you're not doing that immediately, then shift and start wrapping yourself with things that are more meaningful early as you can. You know, if you're 50 years old, it's never too late, 60, whatever. If you're 20 and you figure this out, hey, hats off to you, because you are way ahead of your peers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.